The area code for the number you have dialed has been changed to 724. Please hang up and redial using area code 724-076T.
Thank you for listening to Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Phone Billy Bond for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Phone Billy Bond.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, everyone.
And out in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Alex.
You do indeed. And going in a different order tonight, huh?
Yeah, you caught me. And Gila.
Hello.
How you doing? Somebody's got a loud fan on, so whoever has that maybe could shut it down a little bit. That would be nice.
Sorry, there's a helicopter outside.
There's a helicopter outside. Okay, where exactly are you?
So I'm in my office. I'm in Midtown Manhattan. And between the events of this morning and the tree lighting tonight, it's a little intense in Midtown Manhattan today.
The events of this morning, fill me in. What are we, what event, Alex, what? You give me a baffled look, what?
You know, I texted you about this before the show as well, and you didn't respond. But you know, the assassination that happened this morning.
Assassination?
Have you not heard?
This is what happened.
Wait! That's what we're calling the guy who got shot outside a hotel. Assassination. What makes that an assassination as opposed to just a murder?
Well, the fact that a professional assassin, murdered him. In cold blood.
Did he leave his resume behind? How do you know it was a professional assassination?
Well, I mean, there are certain telltale signs that somebody really knows what the hell they're doing when it comes to taking another person's life.
You know, I think the only telltale sign here is that we're all paying undue amount of attention to this because the guy is a CEO of a big company. That's the only reason. If this had been a poor schmo that, you know, like one of us, nobody would give it the, I mean, I turned on the TV this morning and the press conference from the NYPD was on CNN. It was on MSNBC. It was on Fox. Wait, I'm not done. It's on Fox. It was on News Nation. It was on BBC. It was on all the local channels. This is for one guy getting got outside a hotel. I mean, look, I feel bad. It's awful. And I hope they catch the person who did it. But, I mean, there's millions and millions of people here in New York, and a fair number are victims of crimes at some point, and they get no attention whatsoever. What exactly, and you call it an assassination, that really throws me. And I didn't see your text because you tend to text me like 2 minutes before the show, and I don't really look at my phone then. But, you know, it's interesting. There are some things about the story that fascinate me. For instance, I heard the guy escaped on a city bike? Is that true? Could he be that stupid? I mean, the reason I say that is because, you know, you can't just take a city bike unless one just happens to be lying around. you have to register. So, you know, there's going to be a paper trail at some point of registering for that city bike. And it's a fairly trivial thing for them to figure out who took what city bike in that region at that particular time. And from what was also disclosed at the press conference this morning, yeah, I did watch it. Every city bike has GPS on it. So they know where it is if they can figure out which one it is. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, that's right. So with regard to the city bike thing, the first thing I will say about bicycles in Manhattan, having ridden one for the last, I don't know, God, maybe 14, 15 years now, I've been riding a bicycle in Manhattan. And I got to tell you, it is the best anti-surveillance vehicle that you can have in Manhattan. I mean, you can go the wrong way down one-way streets. You can blow through lights. You can blow through stop signs. There's no car that could chase you and get you on a bike because of the versatility and the places where you can go on a bike. So I think utilizing a bike as a getaway vehicle in Manhattan is actually absolutely brilliant.
Oh, yes, a bike, absolutely. This was a city bike, though. So yeah. You couldn't ask for more tracking of your whereabouts.
Well, I'll tell you this too, though. I mean, I think it's questionable, or rather, the conclusion that he used a city bike to get away is somewhat dubious. I mean, the film footage is pretty grainy. It's hard to tell whether or not the bike has that dark blue hue that city bikes have. It certainly looks like a clunker, which the city bikes are. But I think it might have been one of those electric city bikes that he used. Interestingly enough, there was a data science nerd on Twitter who seems to have been scraping city bike usage data minute by minute and was able to identify that a bike was used right around the Hilton on 6th Avenue. I think it was around 54th or 56th and 6th. It was taken out and then put back in. It was the only city bike that was checked out at around the time of the murder/assassination and then was used to go up to a 82nd in Madison. So if that is, in fact, the bike that was used in this murder, that would have been extraordinarily interesting.
And cutting through Central Park on the way up there.
I don't know if he cut through Central Park.
He went through Central. Really, that was on Blue Sky hours before it was on Twitter, so get with the times.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just not cool enough.
Not yet. Not yet. Yeah, we're working on it, though. Gila, I'm working. You're right in the region. So are you trapped there because they're blocking off all the streets or something?
Well, so I couldn't get home. The trains are messed up for any number of reasons. God bless the MTA. Plus, the Rockefeller Center tree lighting is tonight, so it's a gridlock day. So that's why I'm doing the show from my office. I could not get home in a reasonable amount of time this evening, so I came back. And there are helicopters and there are police officers directing traffic on every corner, and there are helicopters hovering in the sky as we're in the middle of, I wouldn't call it a massive manhunt, but a short manhunt. And yeah, I think a bike is a great getaway vehicle if it's your own bike. And the fact that, who was it? I sent this into the show this afternoon because somebody referred to digital exhaust, I think was the phrase they used. From a bike, from the city bike, conceptually.
Yeah, I see what you posted now, actually. Streams of data that can be used to track the rider. That's according to David Schmoys, a computer scientist at Cornell University who helped design the system. So knows a thing or two about it.
Yeah. You know, I don't have a city bike account. I am scared to ride a bike in the city, so I don't city bike. But, Alex, you're braver than I. But no, everything is just locked up right now. And I do apologize. It's also incredibly warm in my office. This is why I have the window open. But helicopters.
What is a helicopter?
We had an episode of Law and Order today, which is kind of awesome.
Wait, the city went through an episode of Law and Order, or there actually was an episode being filmed?
No, I feel like we're just living in an episode of Law and Order.
Well, this will show up in 2 years, I'm sure, on one of those shows.
I wouldn't even give it that much time.
I don't know. I would hope helicopters are there for crowd management for the tree lighting, because I can't imagine how they're going to find a single person in a helicopter in New York City. But no, I don't know. I don't know the first thing about this, so who knows? But anyway, between the creation of a Citibike account, connecting it to a credit card, undocking it, riding it around the city, and docking it at a new location, every user creates many streams of digital breadcrumbs that can help Lyft, which many people might not know, is the company that operates Citibike. Yeah, you thought it was Citigroup, didn't you? Well, somehow it's Lyft. That helps Lyft track the user's location, possibly their identity. Combined with the user's phone data and location shared with cell towers, it is amazing how much information is conveyed, according to Mr. Schmoyes. I assume they know what a Citibike looks like, the NYPD and other people investigating this. So I don't think they got that wrong. The only question is, was this a Citibike that had been stolen and was just sitting around and this guy happened upon it, or was it unplanned in one way or another? I also heard they found a cell phone nearby. So that's if you drop a cell phone after committing a so-called professional murder, you're not that professional in my eyes. But anyone could have dropped a cell phone, though. That's certainly possible. Go ahead, Alex.
Unless you drop a cell phone full of fabricated data, that's entirely a red herring for police officers, law enforcement, et cetera. That would be pretty brilliant.
Is real life crime that well thought out? Because that would be something.
Yeah, I mean, it very well could be. It'd be pretty simple to fill a cell phone up with a bunch of bogus data, or perhaps to try to point the finger at somebody else or some other entity or some other motive for this particular killing. But, I mean, one thing for sure, though, when it comes to the Citibike, if this guy used a Citibike to commit an assassination, I think that's a pretty clear violation of their terms of service in terms of use.
Well, I don't know if it's even brought up in their terms of service, so he might have found a loophole there.
Probably one of the prohibited acts, or maybe there'll be a change to their terms of service in terms of use policies now that prohibit use in connection with any kind of assassination.
Okay, you keep bringing up that word, and if you're going to use that word, I'm going to use it every time somebody gets killed intentionally. Because what is the difference? I mean, I always thought assassinations were limited to political figures, but I guess, as long as you think the person is important enough to warrant all this attention, and boy, has it gotten a lot of attention.
He's the CEO of a fairly hated, massive insurance company, right? So if this was motivated by trying to cause some kind of change with respect to the insurance industry, or on account of the insurance industry doing something really terrible to this person or this person's family, it's some kind of retaliation, or if it was to gain some kind of business or political advantage, then I think we would call it an assassination as well. I think that's the difference between an assassination and a murder, is that, you're trying to gain some kind of ulterior advantage through the assassination of this particular person.
Well, I mean, if somebody is having an affair with someone else's wife and person B kills person A to gain an advantage by not having person A around anymore, I struggle to find the difference.
Most of those killings would technically be considered manslaughter, because killing of a paramour or somebody having an affair with your wife or your husband are generally crimes of passion that don't require any kind of premeditation. Assassination is really synonymous with murder in many ways, because it requires malice aforethought, which is the premeditation element under the criminal law required for a first degree killing, first degree murder.
I love it as much as the next guy when you talk legalese, but there is some premeditation involved in a lot of killings. They're not always crimes of passion, and there is passion involved in many crimes. So I think if somebody is angry at somebody else and shoots them, it's really no different than what we're witnessing here. And the fact that there's even a different categorization, one is manslaughter and one is first degree murder, that is wrong, because that's putting one life above all others.
Well, consider the difference, though. Let's say you and I get into a really heated debate about, I don't know, let's say content moderation or hashing photos on
device
as opposed to off device, you know, so something like that.
It's
you know,
on.
That,
let's go. That, yes, that, absolutely.
Yeah, let's bring that one up again, mm-hmm. right? Let's say we get into a really heated debate about that. We're at a bar.
Yeah, you want to go? We're going. We're going to go.
We'll do it. Yep. And you pull out that gun that you're always carrying, and you shoot me in the chest because you're so angry about this position that I took that this really wasn't really a privacy violation to create hashes on your device.
All right, let's move on with the analogy. It's getting
to go. You know. Yeah. And by the way, most people agreed with me anyway on that point. So you're so angry about losing that argument that you kill me in a bar. Pull it out and just shoot me.
In a bar or outside the bar? I mean, I wouldn't do it in the bar. I'd do it, you know, in the alleyway. That's traditionally where you do it.
That is tradition. That is traditionally where you would do it. That's true. So that would be manslaughter because it wasn't premeditated, right? It was the heat of the moment. We got into an argument and you decided to kill me at that moment. Now, if you had, let's say, brought gloves with you, you put the gloves on, you had a silencer in this. You decided to get me riled up by bringing up this image hashing argument that we had last year, and we get all riled up. And then you use that silenced gun with the gloves that you brought with you. That would indicate some kind of the necessary premeditation or the malice aforethought for that to go from manslaughter to become a murder charge.
Okay, I still don't see the difference because you know
the difference is the planning. It's
yeah,
the planning.
Why does the planning? Why does the planning make it so much worse? You know, that's what I don't get.
Because it goes from being a crime of passion to a crime that was premeditated. Premeditated murder is kind of the worst crime in the books.
When yeah, you plan but to kill the person is just as dead, and murder is murder. So whether or not I'm feeling impassioned.
You just okay. What he's talking, okay. He's talking. He's making a legal argument. He's talking about in legal terms. You're talking about a moral argument. Speaking in moral terms, mm-hmm. They're two. You're in two different ballparks.
He has no moral code. That's what we're concluding here.
Not true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. All right. Let's move on. This is getting a bit tiresome. Rob, go ahead.
I think it might be sort of a class thing, too, because like assassination versus murder, because just like how you can be just weird, but like once you have a certain amount of money, you're eccentric. So maybe once you're rich and famous enough, you're not just getting murdered, you're getting fancy murdered, you're getting assassinated.
Okay. Well, maybe we should move on to other stories, because there certainly are a lot of them. And this is just something that's taken up way too much time in the city today anyway. Gila, if something happens outside the window, please let us know. Or if the fugitive seeks refuge in your building, tell us about that too. Okay, so I saw this headline earlier today, and it kind of leaped out at me. Trump FBI pick Kash Patel successfully hacked by foreign spies. Now, I'm not an expert on the whole FBI leadership thing here, but I can't think that it's a good thing for somebody who has been picked to head that organization to have headlines written about him saying that he was successfully hacked by foreign spies. Kind of, you know, makes you open to all kinds of ribbing in the office. And, you know, it sort of puts to the side the fact that this guy is a lunatic that wants to dismantle the FBI in the first place. But apparently, Iranian hackers have, and this is how this story from the Daily Beast phrases it, Iranian hackers have reached their tentacles into the incoming Trump administration after the president-elect's pick for FBI chief Kash Patel was targeted by a cyber attack. CNN has cited two sources, one of whom stated that at least some of Patel's communications had been infiltrated. Donald Trump's team wouldn't go into specifics about the reports, and I don't know why we would even ask them. But transition spokesman Alex Pfeiffer told the network Kash Patel was a key part of the first Trump administration's effort against the terrorist Iranian regime and will implement President Trump's policies to protect America from adversaries as the FBI director. Unfortunately, all of this information is in the hands of the Iranian regime, but we're just going to not worry about that so much. But boy, this is a bit of a black eye, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would certainly agree. I mean, I don't know why this seems to happen constantly with the Iranians. I mean, I would like to learn a hell of a lot more about what the technique used was that compromised Kash Patel. You know, was it some kind of impersonation of another individual with whom he was communicating? Did they insert themselves into the middle of a communication? I mean, I'd really like to gauge the operational security of somebody who is going to head the FBI by knowing a little bit more about the sophistication of the attack that was able to compromise him. Because if we're going to put the nation's secrets and, in fact, counterterrorism and counterintelligence in this guy's hands, he should have a little bit more caution, perhaps, when it comes to cybersecurity and be a little more operationally ready. So I think we are owed more information, especially since he's going to undergo some kind of presumably Senate confirmation for this type of position.
His passwords were Trump 2024 on all of his devices. You see, you believe it. You're thinking in your mind that's possible, and that's exactly the point. Is that, yeah, he could be that stupid easily. Never mind as dangerous as he's alleged to be.
But we also know it from prior to the election that the Iranians had targeted Donald Trump and his campaign, and that the Iranians are not happy with Donald Trump. They tried to actively, it seems like, meddle in the election a little bit by releasing information. They had that J.D. Vance dossier that was mostly comprised of open source intelligence and things that were eminently Googleable. But so it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever that they're going after these high-level picks. And anybody who's tapped on the shoulder as a presidential appointee in any position, whether it's high-profile or not, I think should really be taking a look at the manner in which they engage online and have a check of their cyber hygiene.
Well, Iran, of course, is not the only state actor out there that is up to shenanigans. Chinese state hackers known as Salt Typhoon have breached telecommunications companies in dozens of countries. And the U.S. is not exactly an exception here. During a press briefing today, the White House official that basically released all this, Ann Neuberger, told reporters that these breaches include a total of 8 telecom firms in the United States. And while these attacks have been underway for likely 1 to 2 years, she says, at this time, we don't believe any classified communications have been compromised. The Chinese compromised private companies exploiting vulnerabilities in their systems as part of a global Chinese campaign that's affected dozens of countries around the world. I believe it was even referred to last week as the worst breach in history. So that's rather a lot. We cannot say with certainty that the adversary has been evicted, said a senior CISA official, because we still don't know the scope of what they're doing. We're still trying to understand that along with those partners. On Tuesday, FBI officials, get this, advised Americans to switch to encrypted messaging apps to minimize Chinese hackers' chances of intercepting their communications. Our suggestions, what we have told folks internally, is not new here. Encryption is your friend, whether it's on text messaging or if you have the capacity to use encrypted voice communication. Even if the adversary is able to intercept the data, if it is encrypted, it will make it impossible. Okay, does anybody else have an issue with this? Because the FBI is saying, yeah, we believe in encryption. We've always told people this. Encryption is your friend. Literally, encryption is your friend. Is this the same FBI that was fighting tooth and nail against encryption because it made it harder for them to investigate so-called criminals? Alex, back me up here. That happened, right? That wasn't a fever dream.
No, I think that's absolutely right, and that's what happens here. And I think we can go back even further, right? Let's go back to the 1990s here, right? And talk about the Clipper chip for a second. Remember the Clipper chip? Like I remember listening to this show when I was 15 years old in my bedroom, and you guys were arguing about the Clipper chip. And for those who aren't as old as me, the Clipper chip was this little device that allowed communications to be encrypted essentially from end to end. But the problem was, like, so you could use this on the phone, you could use this for email. It was kind of like this universal little chiclet-sized chip that allowed communications to be encrypted. But the problem was, it was supposed to be backdoored so that the U.S. government could access all of the communications that were going to be encrypted. There was going to be essentially a key escrow for a key to decrypt all the communications if the government so wanted. And so the hacker community, privacy community, the cryptography community all threw up their hands and said, this is unacceptable. That was a battle that was fought pretty hard and won by the hacker community back in the 90s. Now, fast forward to Salt Typhoon and the stories coming out over the last week. It's really kind of fascinating because it seems like the manner by which they were able to compromise the, almost the entirety of the United States' telecom in, infrastructure is through something called CALEA, or the Communications Assistance to Law Enforcement Act. And CALEA requires all telecom companies essentially to have a backdoor system whereby wiretaps can be installed. It's called lawful intercept technology. And it makes a lot of sense if you're the government. If you are a prosecutor and you are investigating, let's say, some kind of organized crime, you get a warrant to wiretap somebody. You need to go to AT&T or you need to go to some kind of local carrier, and they need a means by which you they can implement that particular wiretap for you. And it seems very much like this is the technology that's been put in place across all of U.S. telecom infrastructure and is that which the Chinese were able to exploit and utilize, not for lawful intercept purposes, but for unlawful intelligence gathering interception purposes, exactly the kind of stuff that we were arguing about and talking about and banging on, saying this is a danger and this could happen if you backdoor any particular type of system way back in the 1990s. So I'm going to call it and say we got it right 30-something years ago.
Yeah, I don't think there was much arguing on our side because we were pretty much united on that front, that this would be a very bad thing. According to this NBC story, FBI and other federal law enforcement agencies have a complicated relationship with encryption technology, historically advocating against full end-to-end encryption that does not allow law enforcement access to digital material, even with warrants. But the FBI has also supported forms of encryption that do allow some law enforcement access in certain circumstances. But, you know, if you're sending your text messages via Signal or some equivalent, are there backdoors for them to get in? Are there easy ways for them to access those messages? Go ahead, Alex.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think the public key cryptography, that the asymmetric public key cryptography that's utilized in Signal and most of these end-to-end encrypted messaging applications is probably pretty difficult to compromise. I don't think that it's easy for them to do. But the easiest way to compromise any form of end-to-end encrypted communication would be to compromise the device itself. So let's say if FBI or an intelligence agency or some adversary wants to access your Signal chats, if they can access a device, one of the endpoints that has the ability to decrypt that chat, has the key to decrypt on it, then that's very trivial. Then it's simple. So if they can compromise your phone, and people also don't realize that, you know, phones are very often more secure than desktops. So if you're running Signal on your phone and then you have the Signal desktop client running on, let's say, Windows or Mac or something like that, that's another attack vector by which all of those Signal chats could be compromised. And desktops are a hell of a lot less secure than mobile phones most of the time.
But people they don't lose their desktops often.
No, they don't. Well, that's true. They don't lose their desktops. But you know what I'm talking about. Some kind of desktop client, like either if it's for a laptop. But a desktop could be remotely compromised fairly easily as well. You know, pop in through the router, take a peek around. Desktops are pretty almost trivial in many ways to pop if they're not properly updated.
But, you know, the thing with losing a phone, you know, you drop your phone on the street or leave it on the subway or a cab or something like that, and the person is somehow able to unlock the screen. Not the hardest thing in the world to do, especially if it's like some kind of, a shape or something, or a line or a diagonal, whatever. That's fairly trivial to get past that. The question then is, do people have passwords auto-entered, logged in by default, et cetera, et cetera, where if somebody has that phone in their hands, they have a lot of power. They can access an awful lot of things without any kind of confirmation, because it's assumed the person holding that phone is the right person, is a trusted person. So number one, I would advise against making that the default on your phone. And number two, if you do lose your phone, immediately move to deactivate it from everything, which could be, you know, quite a task.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. If you go back to, I can't recall if it was 2016, 2017, when there was that failed Turkish coup against Erdogan that was mostly organized by way of WhatsApp messages.
It was mostly organized by Erdogan, but never mind that.
Yeah, I would be surprised, yes. But when the coupsters were finally rounded up, they had to hand over all of their phones, and, you know, by some kind of duress, I imagine physical duress, they were caused to open those phones, and then the world was their interrogator's oysters at that point. They had access to all of the end-to-end encrypted communications, all of their photos, all of their emails, everything. So, yeah, extraordinarily dangerous attack vector there.
Absolutely. Okay, you know, I saw this other headline today. Chinese espionage campaign scooped up data on thousands of U.S. mobile phone users, according to sources. This on ABC. The story that we're talking about, and what everybody's talking about, worst hack in history, thousands of phone users? You know, I would think it would be millions, many millions. But I don't know if they're talking about the same thing here, but it certainly seems like that number is a little low.
Well, it is weird because I'm looking at that same article and the headline is thousands of U.S. mobile phone users. But the first paragraph in the article says about more than 1 million customers. So who knows?
Boy, people have to proofread these days. Yes, Alex, final point on this.
Well, the difference could be that, you know, maybe millions of people could have been affected. But if it's thousands of people, let me put it this way. I think millions of people's metadata might have been affected, but it could be that thousands were targeted for actual interception of their communications. I think that's more likely to be the case.
Well, it's sloppy regardless.
Yes.
So, yeah, you know, people need to use encryption wherever possible, use Signal. WhatsApp, I know, does end-to-end encryption, and there's all kinds of other apps and programs that people can make use of. Please write to us, oth@2600.com, with your recommendations, your experiences, anything that you experience that is not up to par. We want to know about that as well. It's so important to keep our data safe, you know, and to not be taken advantage of by anybody.
Yeah, like if you feel incredibly frustrated or it's got you sort of furious, channel that into helping test new platforms, new protocols, all that work, or just try them out yourself, teach someone else how to use it. All of those efforts can pay off, and they could actually really help someone who might otherwise fall victim to some of the things we're talking about. So yeah, it is really infuriating just hearing what vulnerabilities were allowed to victimize so many customers that rely on these telecommunications networks, and it's just gall. It's really hard when you think that you're paying for this.
Mm-hmm.
Like I keep going back to that. Like, we pay for this.
Yeah.
How?
Pay a lot.
Why? Pay so much money for this. Anyway, like, the rest of where I would go with that is not safe for air.
Yeah, no, understandable. I imagine a lot of our listeners would agree with that. It's important, you know, when there are solutions that present themselves, that they be transparent, easy to install, don't require technical knowledge of any sort. They should be the default. And I don't think any phones should be sold that do not have end-to-end encryption on, you know, their basic texting programs, texting apps. This is what we need today so that we're not constantly taken advantage of. Okay. Yes, Alex, quickly.
Yeah. One final point on this, too, that I don't think has come out in any of the media reporting about this. But if it is, in fact, true that it was the lawful intercept technology that was put in place essentially to backdoor all of the telecommunications infrastructure across the United States so that the government could listen into phone calls on account of the CALIA, that Communications Assistance to Law Enforcement Act. If we have that capability, that backdoor capability in place, the question I want to ask is, how were Chinese adversaries able to utilize that technology without being caught for so long? If this is so dangerous and such an extraordinarily, I think, powerful capability that we put into the hands of law enforcement, how come nobody is auditing that particular access? Unless the Chinese were so great at covering up their tracks, at anti-forensic behavior here, I would think that somebody in one of these telecoms should have noticed this almost immediately.
Right,
it shouldn't have taken several years and a massive investigation to uncover this. Like, if that infrastructure is being abused, it should have been noticed years ago. That's what I want to understand.
But if that is the case, and I haven't heard this alleged yet, and please let me know if I'm wrong, but if it is the case that this enhanced ability that was given to law enforcement was the weak point that allowed so much of the compromising to take place, they need to be held accountable severely for that, because that was one of the arguments against that in the first place. And to see that happen would be completely infuriating. Kyle, do you have a last word on this?
No, I think it's been said, but yeah, CEOs, take heed. You will pay.
Well, don't make it sound like that. It's no connection to what happened today.
Oh, you're right. It's a bad day for that. God, can we change subject?
I'm trying to, believe me. It's fundraising time here at WBAI, and if you're engaged by this lively conversation we've been having, please, won't you consider donating to the radio station? We survive on your donations, have since 1960, and it's really the only way that this station continues to broadcast. There are a couple of ways you can do this. You can go to buddy.wbai.org, and there you can sign up to basically pay a small amount every month that adds up to a bigger amount over a year and helps keep the transmitter going and helps keep radio station programming flowing over the airwaves and on the internet. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. Your help is appreciated regardless of whether you're local or on the other side of the planet. So please, buddy.wbai.org. Does anybody have the phone number handy? You do, Rob.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yep. The cool new BAI pledge phone number is 1-833-WBAI-NYC. Or if you're a numerical string purist, that's 1-833-922-4692, which spells WBAI-NYC.
I wonder if 833 spells something. If we can make a word from 833, then we've really got it. It's better than that lawyer phone number they keep advertising. Okay, well, that's good, though. 833-WBAI-NYC. How did we do that? That's awesome. Wow. Please, we're serious, though. It's so important to keep this station going. We're at 99.5 FM, in the middle of the FM dial in New York City. And I'm not sure people appreciate what that means, because you may notice that everything 91.9 and below is non-commercial. That's the non-commercial ghetto, they call it, you know, where all the stations are just kind of shunted off and, you know, people don't think about it. They listen to all the commercial musical crap that, you know, appears in the commercial band 92 and above. And a lot of the good stuff is below 92. There is some garbage there too, especially when you have religious stations saying that they're non-commercial as well and taking up frequencies. But regardless, we're at 99.5 FM. We're in the middle of the commercial band. How did that happen? Well, in the same way that we got that cool phone number, we just happened to be in the right place at the right time. This station started as a donation. Yeah, that's the biggest donation of all, was the station itself. This was a commercial radio station, and the owner of that commercial radio station had, I believe, gone out to California, heard a Pacifica station out there, and was so enthralled by it that he said, I want my radio station in New York City to broadcast this. And after a few phone calls when nobody believed him, he finally succeeded in convincing Pacifica that he wanted to donate a full-power radio station in the middle of the FM dial to Pacifica so that it would broadcast non-commercial programming, commercial-free, listener-supported. Yeah, 1960, that happened. And since then, this station has pretty much gone continuously with your support. There is no story like that anywhere on the FM dial or the AM dial in New York City. and in most of the country. And you can help continue that saga just by going to buddy.wbai.org and pledging whatever you can afford. You can be a part of that. Now, I know there are certain numbers, Gila. I think you have the figures on this where you can start voting.
Yes, an aggregate gift of $25 a year or more entitles you to becoming a voting member of WBAI. So again, if you BAI buddy, $2.50, which would not be great because the amount it's going to cost the station in credit card processing fees alone will cancel it out. But if you make an outright gift of $25, or when your BAI buddy contributions add up to $25, you are a voting member of WBAI. Again, we cannot encourage you enough to become a BAI buddy. Helping the station come up with reliable income on a regular basis is hugely helpful. Again, also don't forget, we're coming to the end of the year. All gifts to WBAI are tax deductible within reason. Consult your accountant, but this could be super helpful for you.
Absolutely. Again, buddy.wbai.org. That phone number once again, Rob?
That phone number once again, 833-WBAI-NYC. That's 833-922-4692.
Okay. Remember, we're in fundraising mode here in early December, and the future of the station is in your hands, pretty much. All right. You know, when I say 207, does that mean anything to anybody? Oh, it means something to you, Alex? I know it means something to you. We talked about it. Anyone else? No? Rob, I know it means something to you. No?
I heard something about it recently.
Okay. 207 is the area code for Maine. And in fact, what, you're shaking your head, Kyle? You don't believe me? I can prove it.
I'm sorry. It's 206.
206 is Seattle.
Yeah.
That's where you're from.
Yeah. Go ahead. Tell me about 207.
Well, I can tell you about 206. The fact that it's 206. Okay. A little bit of lore here. Area codes are still three digits, and they either have a one or a zero in the middle. The at least the old area codes did. The newer ones, what a mess. But if it had a zero as the middle number, that meant that area code was good for the entire state. And if it had a one in the middle, that meant there were multiple area codes in that state. So, for instance, New York, 212. Then you had 516. You had 914. You had 518. 315, 716, you see, they all have one in the middle. And when they split before, you know, they went haywire with anything could be an area code, you had 718 and 917 and things like that. Other states like Maine, 207, Hawaii, 808, Alaska, 907. You see, it's one area code for the entire state. And Kyle, 206 being Seattle wouldn't seem to make sense, you know, a city. Except when you think, yeah, it must have been the entire state was 206 at one point.
Yeah, things have changed.
Things have changed
significantly.
There's all kinds of area codes out there now, but not in Maine. In Maine, they want to hold on to their one area code. So basically, the Maine Public Utilities Commission has approved the consolidation of 135 calling areas into one rate center. Those 135 rate centers are served by Consolidated Communications Northern New England LLC, which is the largest of Maine's remaining 24 landline service providers, also referred to as incumbent local exchange carriers. Those other 23 providers serve another 114 rate centers. So basically what all that means, it extends the life of the 207 area code. Now, the current forecast calls for the 207 area code to be exhausted, meaning that it runs out of numbers, by the second quarter of 2036. But previously, they had predicted that it would run out of numbers as early as 2015, then it was 2019, 2024, and it just keeps moving. But with these actions, where basically they're not wasting phone numbers by assigning 10,000 phone numbers to every company that qualifies as a rate center and doesn't need anything near that number of phone numbers, they're able to preserve 207. Now, unlike in many places in this country, there is a certain pride in the 207 area code. People want to hold on to it. They want to make sure that they don't have to use a different area code because they've, quote unquote, run out of numbers.
Does that increase the likelihood that you'll actually get a working number when you call in that area code because they're allocated so sparingly?
Well, you don't know what exchange or what extension in that exchange is going to be used or not used.
But even of a handful of exchanges that you wanted to call through, you would be more confident in theory that
yeah.
you would get someone who's actually using or an otherwise... it's not going to go to some extension that hasn't been implemented. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at businesses in a city like Bangor, Maine, you'll likely find more phone numbers in certain exchanges. So if it's like 336 exchange and you see, you know, it's a pizza place with that phone number, odds are if you keep calling within that exchange, you'll find other phone numbers as well. It's the same pretty much in any city. But there are lots and lots of numbers that are unused. And this whole area code splitting thing has been a horrible development, I think, in telephony, because it wastes so many numbers. It resulted in crazy area codes that don't make geographical sense. But it's good to see that there is a movement to preserve 207. And it means something. It's where you're from. You're from a particular place. I mean, 212 means a lot to us here in New York City. It absolutely does. 213 in California, 312 Chicago, and other numbers as well. But that does matter. And when you start splitting it up so that it doesn't mean anything anymore, you're losing something kind of precious. So good on Maine for recognizing that. Go ahead, Alex.
I think this is an extraordinary effort, and I really believe in this concept of territorial integrity, and that can be defined in many ways by the area code. And I see this effort as akin to something like the Treaty of Westphalia. You know, we all know that took 4 years to negotiate and a battle raged on, but it created this sort of territorial integrity of modern Europe these days. And I think we need the digital equivalent of those types of protections for territorial integrity for area codes. I think it's extraordinarily.
Are you using important. Game of Thrones to make your point?
No, I didn't say Westeros. I said Westphalia.
All right. Just checking.
It also has parallels, I think, to IP addressing allocations.
A lot of waste there as well.
Yeah, like IP4. And I mean, if there wasn't a move towards a different numbering scheme altogether, we'll check back on IPv6.
But not all is well in Maine. I don't know if you heard this other story, but... there are a bunch of radio stations that are going off the air, and they're all owned by author Stephen King. You might not have known about this, but yeah, he owned three radio stations for the last 41 years. The Zone Corporation is the name of the company that basically owned these stations under his control. WZON, WKIT, and WZLO, they'll all sign off on December 31st. In a press release, Stephen King cited losses in the millions of dollars, too much even for him, and also his advancing age as reasons for the shutdown. While radio across the country has been overtaken by giant corporate broadcasting groups, I've loved being a local independent owner all these years, he said. I've loved the people who've gone to these stations every day and entertained folks, kept the equipment running, given local advertisers a way to connect with their customers. Tabby and I guess that's his wife or his cat, I'm not sure. Tabby and I are proud to have been a part of that for more than four decades. Okay, not a cat. The Kings bought WZON in 1983. Zone Corporation said they'd be making no further comment, no further public comment, that is. But maybe this is, a Station Pacifica could grab if it's open. Yeah, you know, it's also important to see when people realize the importance of radio. It's not just us, not just people like us. It's people all over, people listening to AM radio, people out in the boondocks that don't get any kind of other connection to the outside world. And we all recognize the threat that radio is under all the time, the threat from massive corporations that want to own hundreds and hundreds of stations, be the only voice in town, have people read word for word the same newscasts, and have AI do the heavy lifting. And deep down, we all know community radio is where it's at. Whether it's commercial community radio or non-commercial community radio, you want a radio station where there's somebody there live broadcasting at the time that you're listening to them. Somebody who can tell you, hey, there's a tornado coming, or, you know, close your windows, it's about to start raining, or, you know, can celebrate a local team winning or tell you the local news. That is what radio is all about. We've always gotten that here at WBAI. It's good to see people in the rest of the country get that as well. It's sad to see stations like this, and I know Stephen King poured his heart and soul into, wind up either going off the air or falling into those very hands of corporate interests who just don't get it, and they never do. I don't know what it is. For as long as I've been in radio, the commercial entities have never understood radio. They don't play anything different. They play the same hits. They have the same voices. They discourage accents. They do everything that people don't like because that's how the industry works. And it's just sad to see it constantly, constantly win and be the norm. Well, here at WBAI, obviously we're the exception, and you can be the exception too. Please help keep us going. Visit buddy.wbai.org, pledge whatever you can afford, and give a call to that phone number, 833-WBAI-NYC, and talk to a volunteer and pledge whatever you can afford there. The result will be a strong signal at 99.5 FM in New York City, as well as a signal over WBAI.org, where you can hear all kinds of different voices and perspectives and opinions, and also take part in that conversation yourself. It's a fantastic place. It's a gift in New York City. We're so lucky to have it. Please help us keep it and be a part of it yourselves. All right, we're just about out of time here. Any final thoughts before we sign off for another week and go on to overtime over on YouTube?
2600 meetings are happening all over the world this week. Go to 2600.com/meetings to find one near you or start one near you. First Friday of every month in most of the world.
That's right. It's when hackers gather in food courts and other facilities to meet in person and talk about things, share information about technology. It's really pretty amazing. It's been going on since 1987. And it's a lot of fun. Look for one in a city near you or a country near you. All right, we're going to be on YouTube, channel 2600 over there at 8 o'clock. You can call us. You can be a part of the conversation there. And we will be back here next week at 7 p.m. on WBAI. And remember, buddy.wbai.org, 833-WBAI-NYC. See you next time.
Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious or daft, and you feel that you've had quite enough, just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned the sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day in an outer spiral arm at 400,000 miles an hour in a galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 500 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 6,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 1,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whisk. As fast as it can go, at the speed of light, you know. 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember, when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere out in space, cause there's bugger all down here on Earth.